Hello, hello, hello.
Hello.
Welcome to our sixth episode of Couch Chats with Corey and Courtney.
Six episodes.
I am Corey.
I am Courtney.
And I am not.
Today on the show, we have our very, very, very good friend, Vita. Hello, Vita.
Hello, Corey. Hello, Courtney.
Hello.
Kind of the first question I've been asking everyone is, how did you get to the couch today?
Yeah.
What brought you and us together?
So lucky.
Well, being the daughter of a psychiatrist, I have been to the couch many,
Ooh.
Many times. The couch today, I drew the short straw.
Yeah.
Right.
I guess after six
after
episodes,
the sixth one.
you ran out of people.
I didn't know that your father was a psychiatrist.
Yes, and my mom was a psychiatric social worker, so we used to eat dinner laying down.
Really?
Oh,
that,
yeah.
That is so fascinating.
Oh, yeah, unless it's your father.
Did he ever, like, you know, shrink you, or was that kind of not something that wasn't in your house?
He is so tiny, she shrunk. She's
this is the fifth time I've said something that you guys can't see. So we really need to make this a live podcast.
No, oh, please, no.
I always say I have the face for television, or radio, right?
Right.
Yes,
yeah.
That's right.
Too.
The face for podcasts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He hypnotized me once.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I requested it, and then he kind of pulled rank on me, which that's a whole story.
That's a whole... That's Vita After Dark.
Vita After Dark.
Yeah.
That's right.
So, Vita, tell us a little bit about your role with the Barn Players.
I am the president. Ooh. You may genuflect now.
Oh.
President of the board. I think I'm on, like, my ninth year of a two-year term.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
And
you're kind of like that right now, Courtney, aren't you?
As an all-volunteer organization, it's kind of like a Supreme Court justice gig, you know?
Hey, I think if there's anyone who's going to be the president of the barn, I think you're definitely my top choice,
for sure.
Without a doubt.
Because I'm the only one who would come to your couch.
And did you... Were you any part of the organization prior to becoming the president?
I was the secretary for a couple years, and a friend of mine, Tamara Kingston, who used to be with the barn, got me involved. She called me one day and just said, I'm involved with... Oh, she's English.
Yes.
I'm involved with an organization that I think you'd really enjoy, and... They're looking for board members. I said, okay, I'll come check it out. I'd never even seen a show on stage before. And I came to the meeting, and they made me secretary, and...
Were you still on the Mind's Eye board at that time, or is there a difference of time?
I was still on the Camelot Academy board
cool.
at the time. So that, I double-dipped for a year or so, and it just got mm-hmm. to be too much, so...
Yeah.
Well, we're glad that you are part of the Barn Players.
Thank
you. As a representative of someone who has sort of been playing with the barn for the last couple of years, I definitely enjoy the familiar face.
We like playmates.
Yes. Something exciting, the barn just announced about a week ago what their 2018-19 season is going to be, and we're really looking forward to that. This will be the second... full season that will be taking place at the Arts Asylum.
Yes,
so
our home.
We love to have the barn here.
Mm-hmm.
We're about almost halfway through this current season right now. Torch Song Trilogy will be opening up next week. I believe that's the
31st.
Yeah,
Thursday
the
31st.
The day that this will be on the
yeah.
air. So today, for those who are
for
listening
For those of you listening.
Time,
oh,
today,
the mind. It's so crazy.
But we still have a week. So
yeah.
We're going to hold on very closely to that week.
But we're very excited. I personally have never seen Torch Song Trilogy.
Nor
ever
have
done.
I, but with good reason, I suppose, because it hasn't been performed in Kansas City
right.
for, I believe, 17 years.
Yeah, that's amazing. Do you know where it was previously?
I do not.
Yeah, maybe I need to get the director on
it. Really
quiz
excited about it. She knows.
Well, I know the movie with Harvey Fierstein. Like, I love that movie, and... I'm really excited to see what Chris McCoy and all of those band of misfits do with this little play.
Mm-hmm.
But we're pretty excited about
it's
that.
It's the first play of the season, too.
Yes.
The first play as opposed to musicals.
Actually,
so that's
the only
exciting.
Play of
the only
season.
Only play of the season.
Yes.
The one play of the season.
And the barn used to do two plays a season?
True. Four
yeah.
adult musicals and two adult plays is what we traditionally performed at our previous location.
Mm-hmm.
But with the move, we just wanted to be... conscientious of our finances and, you know, make sure our audience and actors followed us. And so for a couple years, we will do the one play. And this season has been going so well so far. We're already talking about adding back the second play for 2020.
I know those directors and actors that like to just do straight plays are really sort of excited for that opportunity to maybe get to play in more than just one in that season. So that could be really cool if that all works out.
Yeah, over the years, we really settled on doing the two plays during the summers, because that way we're not competing for the straight actors for Theater in the Park or Leawood Stage Company or whatever. It seems to be a musical time.
Yeah.
And so we kind of gravitated towards that.
That's really cool. Excuse me, I really enjoyed part of, you know, in your previous years, some of your, like, summer, you know, shows as well. The Graduate was one of my favorites that I saw a few years ago. The Crucible last year. Yeah, I was obsessed with The Crucible. I was so glad.
You know, when our artistic director showed me the potential slate of shows for that season, and I was just, oh, fabulous, fabulous. The Crucible? And I went, you know, everybody has read this in high school. You know.
No, that was the hot ticket to direct and get to be a part of.
We had more director applicants for that show than any other.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
You guys landed on the wonderful David Martin, who directed that. He was my lock stock in Urinetown.
And he did not disappoint.
He did not. I certainly do enjoy that weirdo. He's so fun.
Yeah.
And I knew him when he was not little. If anybody out there knows David,
he's so tall,
6'20" or something.
I met him for the first time in 2001,
and you're a better person for
when he was the drummer in a Leawood Stage Company show that I was a part of. So I didn't even realize until much later that he was behind us hitting that drum.
Bigger drummer boy.
Yeah. I wish he would do more music like that. I don't really hear too often that he participates in a band or orchestra.
No, it's kind of a sideline for him. I think he likes his drama.
And
his improv and his girlfriend and his family.
I love Jessica Friends. She's a wonderful lady.
Yeah.
So can you tell us just a little bit about how you guys go about picking your season for The Barn?
We try very hard to come up with a well-balanced season. And by that, I mean, if we have a show like The Crucible that's female-heavy, then we try to have a male-heavy show. Mm-hmm. We try to pick something that has wide appeal for our actors, as well as what will bring in director applicants. Something that maybe hasn't been done for a long time, like Torch Song Trilogy, or something that has just undergone a Broadway revival, or something that's a community theater premiere in Kansas City.
You have a couple of those this next season, right?
Yeah, we're very excited.
I love that you guys added those to the, you know, sort of the end of your descriptions on the website is the premieres and stuff like that.
And we also try to balance the R-rated and the GP-rated. We certainly don't seek those shows out, but we're not scared of them either.
Right.
Yeah. So,
and I really am glad that the Arts Asylum is hopefully providing you the safe place to be able to maybe do a little bit more of those sort of stranger shows as well that maybe you wouldn't have thought about doing over in Mission. Not that the audiences wouldn't have followed that and been okay. It's just our location sort of allows maybe for a little more frisk, maybe.
Well, and in looking for places, that was a thing we had to take into consideration. There were places that wanted to get involved with the choosing of the shows to stay away from
certain
topics or language or nudity, and we just...
You pretty much cleared that up in your upcoming season with all those things.
Here's all the things.
Here's everything.
Know, I didn't get to see your performance of Hair. Did you guys do the nudity in it?
I think you have to.
Yeah.
I mean, and truly, that show is known for that.
Right.
But it's like 30 seconds.
Right, it's nothing.
And it's the end of Act 1.
Well, and it's like, important. It's an important portion of... I mean, I think it's very strange that that becomes so controversial, because it's not a... It's not like it's a sex scene. That's not what's... You know, for anybody who hasn't seen Hair, it's not a sex scene. It's not, you know, it's not raunchy like that. It's not like, oh, we're grinding on stage, you know, or anything that's weird, but it's really reflective of what that generation was trying to say.
Mm-hmm. And the weirdest part is, where do you put your mic packs?
Right.
Yeah, that's the hard part.
Live
theater.
That is good. That is a good sense. Have you been holding on to that? Because that is solid.
We did not plan this. Like,
yeah, no. That is funny.
No, actually, I can't take full credit for that. I was a witness to a discussion about it. Mm-hmm. We have Barney judges who are every year anywhere from 4 to 6 equity actors, directors.
Are they the same every year, or do you shift those out?
It's not that they have term limits, just like the presidency, but it's due to their own restrictions and scheduling and all of that.
Yeah.
But the year of Hair, we must have spent 20 minutes at the Barney brunch, when they're supposed to be voting on their their awards, they were debating, where do you put the mic packs?
Where do you put that?
And one of the judges found it so distracting, you know, to see this person buck naked except for the mic pack. And, you know, literally, it is a 30-second scene.
Yeah. It is.
So,
He directed that, the audience was, like, right in it. It was, like, in the thrust. And so there were moments that I had literally a thrust at one point. And because of where we were sitting, like, they were on top of us and all around us during that. It was a completely immersive little evening, I will say that.
Phil Keenan was the director for that. And there couldn't, I don't think, have been another director that we chose to
He was the right person to play
with. He was the right person for the right show at the right time. And he spent weeks ahead of rehearsal schedule developing a tribal community with his actors, which you have to do. You have to do. And he never demanded that people get naked. And sometimes the actors, depending on who was in the audience that night, I mean, if their work colleagues were there and they didn't particularly feel like like showing it all.
Mom and dad are in the audience. Right.
Yeah. With me, that would be something we'd have to get over very quickly, because my mom and dad are in the audience every night.
That's right.
Right.
That's
Hi, guys. Right. Right. Yeah, so... go ahead and give us the season for next year. Yeah. Speaking of nudity, I think the first show that opens up your season maybe has a flash of nudity in it.
Flash.
Yeah.
Actually, we are revisiting the Full Monty.
Yeah.
And
fun.
For those of you who don't know that show, I mean, it's a great, fun show. And it spends the bulk of the show talking about this scene where they get naked, but literally, once again, it's a 30-second scene and done with a lot of backlighting, and so it's all very tasteful, except when we did it the first time at the barn, which I believe was 12 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And on the final Sunday matinee, there seemed to be a glitch in the lighting.
There wasn't a big flash of light that maybe should have taken place?
Not big enough.
Congratulations to all the people on that show. I can't talk too much about it, as that'll be part of my director interview, but I'm very excited that you all are doing that show. It's a show of you know, about being very comfortable in your body and stuff like that. So I'm very excited to whoever gets to do that. That story gets to be told next year. That's really cool. And then the show after that will be
Grand Hotel.
Yes, I think that is fun. I have never got to see that show. Do you know Grand Hotel,
I don't.
Courtney?
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Nor do I. But as I understand, there's a little bit of intrigue and love, and it deals with the goings on in the lobby of the Grand Hotel, and beautiful music. As
people that know it are very excited that you guys are doing this.
So, and I believe that's a community theater premiere
as well. Yeah, I know a couple of friends that I think are going up to Chicago actually this weekend to see that. So I'm really excited for their review of that.
And I'm going to Duluth. What's wrong with this picture?
I don't know. The classy life of Vida.
That's right. And then, pictures on Facebook to come.
Then do you go into the play next? Is that correct? Curious Incident?
Yes. And hopefully you all out there listening saw this at the Rep. It was a great production this year. It's called The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime.
Yeah.
And it's...
Tony Award winner play? Yes. Did it win the Tony?
I believe...
I think it did.
5 Tony Awards, including Best Play.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That was a couple years ago, I think. So, yeah. That was kind of like all the rage in New York, I think, that summer. Yeah. So
it's about a 15-year-old boy who happens to be on the autism scale. He's kind of a mathematical savant. Mm-hmm. And... the neighbor's dog dies, and he gets accused, and he spends the entire play trying to solve the crime.
Yeah. It's a fascinating play. You guys, please come and check that out. It's pretty cool. And then, is it Mamma Mia next?
Yes,
Mamma Mia.
ABBA.
Really, I know I'm super excited to see...
Sure.
To see that show. And that's your one of the season that I believe is directed by your artistic director, Eric Magnus.
Eric Magnus.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So that's fun. Every year he kind of gets to take a show that he sort of wants to play with, and I think that that's great. That
is our one perk that we do offer our artistic director. He does not get paid. It's all volunteer. And so if he wants to, and he hasn't always wanted to, he's allowed to choose a show, a season, and the board has to vote on it. And sometimes he's very generous and says, you know, I would direct this one, or this one. And he's actually put emails out to potential directors saying, hey, rate the shows 1 and 2 that you would like to do. And he will then take the show that's
maybe not getting a lot of biting.
Right,
So that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we're really excited about that. And I believe maybe Mamma Mia 2 comes out soon.
Like
so I think that'll
20
be...
minutes. So
It's really... I can't imagine what that's going to be, but I can't...
The daughter's pregnant. I don't know.
We'll see. Let's be real that the movie was questionable to start.
It was
a great show.
It is a vehicle
of
the music.
The music is so much fun, and it has wonderful people.
And I think ABBA's releasing new music, too.
I think that's what's happening. Coming out with a whole new album,
right? When it came through in the music hall series, and the boyfriend, I have season tickets, and he said, oh, Mamma Mia. And he was the first one on his feet, just dancing.
It's so much fun.
I think even the biggest fuddy-duddy even loves to get up at the end of that. I mean...
You just can't.
It's dancing queen, people.
Right.
Like, who doesn't want to dance to that?
I know.
That speaks to my little gay heart. I'm just like,
That was me in junior high and high school.
I feel that. And then you wrap up the season with a show that I am super excited that you guys are going to be doing,
so
Victor
Victoria.
Do you
want to direct all of these?
I would be really fun.
You would follow.
Yeah, all of them would be really cool. Because... like I said, I've never got to see Victor Victoria, which is the last show of the season. I didn't say that. I've never seen that on stage. I've seen the movie. I've seen the Broadway production. I've seen all of that, but never got to check that out up on stage. Obviously, Mamma Mia, everyone loves to dance around with. So it's... You have a solid little season, girlfriend.
We do. Yeah. I'm very excited.
And I'm glad that you guys released it just to make sure that nobody else tried to come in and...
Aren't we clever that way?
Yeah. That's so great. So one of my questions I had actually for both of you is, what is it like to be the female head of your organizations? And kind of like, what is awesome about that, and maybe any struggles that you may have in some capacity?
Well, Courtney, you're a mother too, so you're more female than me, so you go first.
Okay, fair enough. I think it's wonderfully empowering, though I will say that in this Kansas City art community, it is so many women. We have, you know, you've got the Heidi Vans and Vanessa Severo in there, you know,
Cynthia,
Cynthia at the Unicorn, and Shauna at the Living Room. There's a lot of kind of women in charge, and I love how wonderfully empowering that is. I will say, and I think you and I have had this conversation before, that it does, there is still, because in the lovely arts community, we also have to ask people for money a lot. There's still an element of, I know I am hyper aware because I am not a woman of small stature, that like I can't wear my highest heels when I'm going to the downtown council. I can't wear, you know, I think that you're still very aware of the fact that we are not in a place in this country and society that I am treated always as an equal.
All that, yes. I think, though, that awareness that many females do have is something that is a welcome asset in dealing with the arts and being a female leader in an arts organization. There's so much networking and there's so much collaboration that I think many of the traditionally female traits are a welcome advantage.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and it's also, you know, we're not in, though both of us spend time in, you know, quote unquote, a boardroom. It's a very different boardroom environment than neither of us are, you know, high-powered attorneys or in politics or anything like that. So I think that our business is much more focused on the emotion of the business. And so I think it's very vital that we do have this many women kind of in power around the city, the Cheryl Kimmies and, you know, all of that. It's a more emotional business.
Do you guys feel that you try to fill out your boards with females more, or do you think that it just naturally falls upon, you know, your gender demographics on your boards? Do you feel like you like, do you try to give more women the opportunity to be on boards, or do you kind of just let those things naturally fall?
In our case, when I first joined the board, we were very heavy on artsy people who didn't understand the significance of strategic planning.
A lot of great dreamers, but not... Yeah.
Oh, well, and they wanted to put together a great season so that they had something to be in.
Right.
And it just wasn't working. And so over the years, we've reestablished the board to... It is a working board, all volunteer, but we really try to focus on the needed skill sets. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a lawyer, and we have... You know, the artistic people, and we have representatives from different parts,
backgrounds,
you know, numbers people and that kind of thing. And so that's worked really well for us.
Yeah.
And, you know, we still have to have artistic people on the board so that we can put together an attractive season.
And that pulse, you know, artistic people are like, no, but think of the fabulousness of this, and that's always fun.
Well, and that's the thing, is that it's really important when you do have a working board, we also have a working board, that you have the people who have the passion and the drive for the arts, but also are like, but this is also a business, and that's the part that you don't really have to say out loud. You know, save the people who are the amazing dreamers for the staff that are producing things, or the people who are going to be part of committees who are actually, you know, in charge of that. But you also have to, like, do taxes, and it's, you know, and like,
you do?
And
that was all today.
No one ever saw Vita again.
Yeah. She's taking selfies on the beach somewhere.
In romantic Duluth.
Yeah. Why are you going to Duluth?
One of my bestest friends from growing up, Susie Leach, her husband Reed live up there. Reed was raised in Duluth, so they ended up there. And several years ago, I introduced the boyfriend to them, and they like him much better than they even like me. And Susie and
he's
I
very are, charming.
He, well, thank you.
Yes.
And he's easy in the eyes, too. Are you listening, Carrie?
Hey. Not if he's not within the 10-mile radius right now. So we have some fun kind of getting to know behind the name.
Rutroast.
There are easy, fun questions. There are our version of the Actors Studio questions.
Okay. Well, I actually have one question that is not one of our standard questions.
Cool.
Because You had mentioned that you sort of kind of fell into theater, but you are also a visual artist.
Oh yeah, I was in my previous life. Yes.
So yeah, we need, you know, at some point we'll talk about the what did you do? You're a sculptor?
I was a sculpture major. Mm-hmm. It was a very short line at enrollment. And I was, seriously, I was in liberal arts.
That's one of the best answers. That might be the title of the show, The Short Line at Enrollment. That is going to be probably the theme of the show.
Well, I had taken sculpture and ceramics and all the three-dimensional artsy stuff all through high school. My mother was a sculptor painter, and I was in liberal arts up at KU, but decided I wanted to take an intro to sculpture class. And so at enrollment, I went to the table, and the lovely gentleman who I found out later was the head of the department was sitting by himself. And I said, I would like to take this class. And I have learned after this episode that he has a very dry sense of humor. And he said, oh, you have to be a sculpture major to take this class. And I said, so sign me up. And
there we are.
The only sculpture major.
That's fun, though. What a cool, fun little story. What was his name?
Eldon Teft.
Cool. What a fun name, too.
Eldon just died a couple years ago, and
hopefully someone made a nice sculpture for him.
Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm. He was the gentleman who created the original Jayhawk sculpture on Jayhawk Boulevard in front of Strong Hall.
Cool.
If anybody has been up to KU in the last 20 years, probably, the big statue of Moses out in front of the religion building was one of his. I got to help with that.
That's actually cool.
Yeah.
That's so fun.
And off the record, it's modeled after his son.
Ooh.
It was very attractive.
Very so, dapper. Yeah. Hello, Moses.
I never thought of Moses when I saw him.
No. Yeah, see? I knew we'd get behind the mask. It's pretty fun.
Fair enough. And then your brother is a musician who will also be here.
Yeah, we have an event on June 5th, I believe, right?
Tuesday, June 5th.
Yeah, and he will be here at the Arts Asylum.
Eric Baikalis.
Yeah, we love
him.
Look
him up on Spotify. Or
my dad said, I mean, I have to go see that. Look at that resume. Like, he was pretty impressed by that biography.
Yeah. Eric has been a working musician since he left college, and he has played with the Pointer Sisters, the Hudson Brothers, Tom Wopat, Bette Midler, Cher, spent probably the last close to 30 years with Neil Sedaka. Mm-hmm. As his...
So you're saying he has no talent, let's is what you're saying.
That's just accompanying. And then he also produces, he writes, and most of the things he'll be playing here will be his original stuff.
That's super so cool. Yeah. I'm really excited for that night.
Yeah.
How much are tickets for that? Donations at the door?
Yes. All the money is going to him. So, Starving Musician, come support him. It's $15 at the door, cash or credit card. And the bar will be open, I believe.
Yes, the bar will be open. I'd like to make a buck or two.
Absolutely.
So one of my questions is, what do you think your perspective is as an outsider? What do you think people think of you compared to how you see yourself?
Me or the barn?
You.
You.
You. The Vita.
We're back on the couch.
Yeah. Yes. We have left a little bit of the barn, and we're getting to know the person behind the name.
Well, I think that most people have a very warped sense of how other people see them, or they see themselves differently, how other people see them. And I think people from, if they've gone through high school, have had these thoughts. Or maybe it's just being the daughter of a psychiatrist.
Maybe. You've always known how to introvert and think of yourself and
It's interesting. Psychiatry always fascinated me. And I think that it has, I don't know whether it's genetic or growing up with it, but I do have, I think, more interest in it and more of a psychiatric bent than maybe a cobbler's child. But the frustrating part is it doesn't give you any more clue as to how to fix those things
about
you that get most people to go into psychiatry. Mm-hmm.
I almost wish that I could have the public answer this question too, mm-hmm. and then read to the person mm-hmm. after they answer mm-hmm. this. You know, we're going to have Vita on. Please email us what your perspective is of that.
I think probably the biggest difference. Many times people would see me as very, controlled, together, outgoing, get it done, blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah. And, you know, on the inside, I get my feelings hurt. Mm-hmm. I get pissed off. Ooh, am I allowed to say that?
You are.
Okay.
Remember? Boop. Vita. That's right.
So, yeah, and I think the lesson to be learned here is I don't think that I'm unique in that regard. We just do a job, and we put on our little thespian mask, mm-hmm. and we get her done. Yeah. But, when I have an idea and the board doesn't like it, or, you know, people promise to do something and they don't, and... those things mm-hmm. bother yeah. you just like they bother anybody.
Yeah. Right. So you would say that you think that your perspective outwardly is that people think that you just let things sort of roll off and you're fine, and then maybe inside you're actually like, well, that really sucked that they didn't do that, or that they hurt
sure.
my feelings.
But I don't yeah. think that's no. too different than most people.
Yeah. We're just kind of trying to find the common denominators amongst people, and that's just one of those things.
That's true.
That be it.
Courtney has a couple of fun questions for you.
Where would you live if not here?
Where would I live? Yikes. Dead airspace.
Boop, boop.
Boop, doop, doop. Italy, Switzerland.
Fun. Switzerland. Yeah, she dreamed big. Other people, I swear someone was like, Grandview?
We
love Grandview.
Oh, no, right. I answered that.
What would you be doing if you weren't doing this?
I originally wanted to be a medical illustrator.
Cool.
And I just got scared off by graduate school. There, at the time I was looking. That was a much longer line.
Nice pullback.
At the time I was looking, there were only two schools that offered a graduate degree. And they were Johns Hopkins and the University of Michigan. Mm-hmm. You were in school 7 years.
Wow.
And you didn't even become a doctor at the end of it.
And you just were able to get into the room and sketch? Is that what that is? I don't even know what that job is.
Well, it's very different now than it was back in the day.
Right?
Yeah.
A lot of it, yeah. But back then, it was very realistic drawing and coloring and... charts for studies and,
you go in and they have the, diagram of your ear.
But I just think that would be so cool.
I'll bring my portfolio and show you my hip joints and pelvises.
Hey, cool. Right here, ladies and gentlemen, Vita is going to show me her pelvises.
That's a fascinating, that somebody has to do that, right? I would have never thought of that because I wanted to be a courtroom sketch artist.
Oh, well.
I was that same kind of, it's art, but you're in, I come from a very long line of lawyers, you come from a long line of doctors, uh-huh. So and I guess that makes sense, where we're just sitting here going, but I'm an artist,
what can I do
in this same thing?
Well, that's true. Did you pursue it at all?
I did not.
Well, I was asked to do some drawings for a friend's research project mm-hmm. at the KU, which is how I discovered this, and I went to his lab and drew hamsters getting blood transfusions. Mm-hmm. And this is fascinating. Mm-hmm. So over Christmas, my junior year, I went to KU Med Center, and the head artist there was...
I love that, KU Med Center's head artist. That's so cool. I never would have thought that existed.
Well, at that, they might not anymore. Right. But at that point, there were five artists, And they each had a separate specialty. One did calligraphy, one did photography, one did, you know. So she was lovely and gave me a list of things to include in a portfolio. Not a portfolio, but to get experience up at KU. And I'm jazzed. And I went back up to the painting and sculpture department. And I said, I want to do this. And the head of the biology department says, you know, you're not the first person to ask about this, and you are welcome to take whatever classes in our department you choose.
Oh, fabulous. That is so cool.
So then I went to the head of the painting and sculpture department, and he said, well,
You mean the sculpture class.
I suppose there's a need for it, but I wouldn't exactly call it an art form. And you can take all the science you want, but we're not letting you out of 1 hour of studio.
Wow.
Cool.
So I stayed in school an extra semester, and I cut up on cadavers and took physiology and anatomy. And
I never would have thought that. The couch is proving its purpose.
There you go. Get to know behind
the person.
Wow. Yeah. Interesting.
And honestly, the art class that I took through the graduate biology department was far superior to any class. I learned more than I ever learned in any of the art classes.
Yeah, my high school art teacher as in senior year was a courtroom sketch artist, and then he also consulted with a forensic anthropologist, like to recreate skull, absolutely super cool, like that kind of thing is stuff that people just don't think about as being an artistic profession that isn't specifically art.
When I got out of school, I was fortunate enough, I guess, to get a job $3 an hour with no benefits as a cover artist at Intercollegiate Press yearbook company.
You're one of the most interesting guests I've had on so far. You may get the whole hour if you're not careful.
Are we on a timer?
No, but like you might get the whole one. I may forego the Corey and Courtney portion, because I might have another subject that I'm going to bring up. I do have a subject I'm going to ask you about in a second. It's something that we've discussed further.
Do we want to go further? Because now I'm like, what else could we talk about that isn't my stupid questions?
Well, we will touch back on it, because I want to make sure that we ask some of these. Yeah. But it's the idea of that thing that we talked about sort of narcissistic conversation.
Ooh.
And ever since we had that conversation, I have been very, very in tune with that idea. And being on the radio and interviewing people, I have found how easy it is to do that by trying. So we'll talk right about that. Just give a few seconds.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
Let's see. Let's change it up today. What are the best and worst purchases you've ever made?
The best and worst purchases. I am not a huge spender.
The worst purchase.
Okay, I've got it. Susie and I were traveling. We used to go on a trip every year. And we were in Taos, New Mexico. And, you know, there's the kind of artsy gallery shop place. And we went into this store with high-end coats, ladies' coats that were handmade specifically, you know, made to order.
Right.
And I tried one on and fell in love with it, and I was working at the time, not married, no children, so I ordered one. It's like $1,500 worth of coat back then. And it arrived, and it was a piece of crap.
Oh, no!
Do you still have it?
The story continues.
Yes.
So I immediately call this company and say, it's not even laying properly. Right. It's not good. And so they said, well, it's specifically made for you. We can't do anything if you want to send it back. So silly me, I sent it back thinking they were going to refund my money.
They didn't refund your money?
They did not refund my money, nor did they send me a new coat, nor did they send me the old coat back, even when I had my, at the time, sister-in-law, who's still my lawyer, but she's also a judge, and I think at the bottom of the letter I carbon copied 60 minutes and a bit. But they,
Really?
So that was the biggest, worst purchase.
That is rude.
I regret that purchase, and it's not mine.
I know. I'm like, whoops. You should not return it next time.
Probably the scariest purchase I made was my dad and I bought a duplex after I graduated from college, and then I bought his half and then sold that and then bought my first house. Mm-hmm. Well, I bought it at 11 o'clock at night, the same night I saw it, by myself, and I went to bed that night thinking, oh God, I don't remember any closets.
Right.
You know.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So that was a little frightening.
Yeah. Buyer's remorse is real when it comes to houses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you could be invisible for a day, what would you do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, the first inclination is to say, oh, well, I would, you know, eavesdrop on everybody's conversations, mm-hmm. you know, to find out what they really think about me. But, you know, it goes back to the earlier question. I don't think I want to know.
Right.
I mean, I really don't. It would be interesting to kind of sneak into other boardrooms.
Cool.
And decision-making panels and things, mm-hmm. and just get the scoop.
Kitty Gilchrist was that she wanted to go into the Royals locker room.
So that's the bus.
And our good friend Craig Aikman's response was is that he wanted to go and sit in on his kids during the school day and just see how they acted and like who they sort of were without their parents sort of paying attention.
Well, I think that for his kids. And, you know.
Well, that's what he was like. Everybody always tells me how amazing my kids are, but I don't know if I believe it. So I want to go see.
having taught kids art at Camelot Academy for six summers, I would always tell the parents about their children when they're not around. Mm-hmm. Just because parents think that their kid at home is the way they are, and it's really not. It's how they are out in the real world and how
Absolutely.
They treat other people, how they deal with adults and children, you know, other mm-hmm. children. Mm-hmm. So,
it's fascinating. Sure. And I think there's a lot of kids in our immediate life that are pretty damn good little citizens of, you know, of the next generation. I've really enjoyed, you know, not just Sarah and Craig's kids or Courtney's kids, but just a lot of the kids that come around, especially with Barn and rehearsals. I'm like, mm-hmm. you got a good little group coming up.
Well, and there's a reason for that.
And what is that reason?
And I tell this to all of the parents at Barn Kids, which are our summer session for little kids.
And then the plug. That's good.
Yeah. And then Barn Junior, our older kids, middle school and high schoolers, who perform in January. But there have been studies that show that children who are exposed to the arts at an early age do statistically better on standardized tests. They're more socially adept than their peers who have not. And as adults, they are more civically involved.
Yeah.
I believe that.
So
I feel like,
so there.
I feel like your kids and Grayson and Ari as well, like, I feel like their conversations about what is happening in today's world is also a lot more relevant. Like, I heard Grayson just be like, I can't wait to vote so I can, like, change something. And I'm like, you're 12, but he already knows the importance of mm-hmm. what his vote can stand for.
Yeah.
So I just think that's... Yeah. Come on, kids. That's awesome. So, as we wrap up, if you could tell us just a little bit about this concept that you talked about, which is like narcissism, like conversation.
Social narcissism.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's really what it's called or not, but that's what I'm calling it. So it's the concept. Well, let me tell you the story that I heard. Female coworkers. One of them's father died, and she was taking it very difficultly. Difficultly?
Sure. We'll go with that.
It was hard. And
it was difficult.
Yeah. Thank you. The friend saw her kind of out by herself during lunch, kind of looking depressed. So she went and sat with her, and, how you doing? And she, well, having a hard time since Dad died. And it had been 6 months, at least. Mm-hmm. And the friend, in trying to empathize and trying to make her friend feel better, said, Yeah, I know those first couple months when my dad died were really tough, but then you have to just, I just kind of had to pick myself up by the bootstraps and get on with it. And the original friend was incensed because all she heard was, I'm not grieving properly.
Right.
And she said, well, I guess I just don't know how to grieve. And the friend said, oh, no, 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 that's not what I meant. I'm so sorry. That's not what I meant. And there was nothing she could say that could dig herself out of the hole she was in. And the concept socially is that in trying to identify with people or empathize or to just participate in a conversation, you say something.
Yeah. I have a headache.
I have a headache. Mm-hmm. And then I say, oh, I'm so sorry. God, you know, when I get a headache, I like to lay down in a dark room. And that's not what you should be saying. Everybody does it. Don't get me wrong.
Naturally, we do it.
We naturally do it. And it does nothing but kind of drive a social wedge, or you get people ticked off that they're not going to say anything, so then they harbor these bad feelings. Mm-hmm. And it sounds so simple, but since I read this article, I notice how often we all do it. I'm guilty. Everybody is guilty.
Do you find yourself omitting from trying to do it?
I try desperately.
Yeah.
Sometimes my stories are just more
interesting.
Right?
I feel the same. I have an interesting story. No, no,
no. No, but now that you all listening are aware of this, you will find that you do it all the time. Everybody does it to you all the time.
And you're just trying to make a human connection. I understand why it happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's the form. You get your time to tell your story. So you get to tell me about your headache. And the next time I have a headache, I would hope that you wouldn't tell me about that time you had a headache. Mm-hmm. It's a very simple concept. Yet it's impossible sometimes
to avoid it.
Well, because you're trying to continue the conversation.
Right. Yeah, because that's my thing, is I listen to you guys have the conversation, and now I'm like, I have to just be mute, because I don't know what to say. Like, I don't yes, that's too bad.
You're right, you do have a headache.
You have a headache, I'm so sorry.
Well, I mean, it's one thing to empathize with Corey's headache,
mm-hmm.
and say, oh, I'm so sorry, or are you doing anything for it? Or do you get these often?
And then you, the person, are allowed to say, hey, what do you do when you have a headache?
Sure.
And so you're allowing the person A to be in charge of the conversation.
Yeah.
And it's...
Damn, it's hard.
Well, it is just, ever since you just casually dropped that on me that day, I
ruined your day.
Well, I am just insanely conscious of it now. In every interaction, and that's why I thought it was funny, when being on the radio, how often I was trying to correlate things so we could move, and then I said, hey, I actually need to bring up a subject that Vita brought to my attention. But I told that to a lot of my friends, like, right afterward. I went out and I started telling people about this concept, and it's crazy whenever you try and pay attention to it.
Yeah.
What it's like. Anyway, I just love that. You changed my brain.
Ooh. Mm. Maybe so I should have gone into psychiatry.
You should have. Right. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that was today's session of Couch Chats with Corey and Courtney.
Yes. And Vita.
And yeah, we had our wonderful, wonderful friend Vita on today, and I'm so glad, and I look forward to, over the next years together, you sitting on our couch as often as possible.
I would love that.
Yes, yes. And for anybody listening, today is when Torch Song opens. Come see it. Go to thebarnplayers.org for more information, for tickets, for all that good stuff. And
you are listening to KOJH
104.7 FM.
All right. Have a super day, and thanks for stopping by, Vita.
Thank you, guys.
Bye.
Bye.